It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In this Politics Day, we're getting to know some of the non-major party candidates running for office this hour. Joining me to listen into conversations, which we've recorded over the last few days, Dave Anderson is with us live, assistant professor of political science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. We have a lot of material to get through this hour as we listen to the conversations from these non-major party candidates. We'll listen back to those short conversations, get a sense of the priorities of these candidates, why they're running. We'll be hearing from Bob Quast, Brian Jack Holder, Ruth Smith, Rick Stewart, and Ed Wright in conversations. But first, Dr. Doug Butsier was the Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate and an emergency room physician. Doug Butsier died late on Monday when the single-engine plane he was piloting crashed near Dubuque Regional Airport. Our condolences to his family and close friends. Yesterday, Ed Wright, Libertarian candidate for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District, offered these thoughts about Doug Butsier.
Libertarians in Iowa are deeply saddened by the loss of Dr. Doug Butsier in his airplane crash last night. Doug was a friend and an admired champion for liberty. He will be sorely missed. And my condolences to his family and close friends.
Dave Anderson, Dr. Butsier's death 3 weeks before Election Day, obviously raising some political questions. Will his name be replaced on the ballot?
I don't believe it will. If it's on the ballot already, it should stay on the ballot. I'm not sure of that specifically, but it should stay on, I believe.
Early voting has been going on for several weeks now. What happens to votes cast for him in early voting?
Unfortunately, this is one of the problems with early voting, is that if a candidate pulls their name off the ballot or if they can no longer run for some reason, if your vote has been cast, it is cast. There's no way to go back and change it.
I wonder if that's different. If he would have been a major party candidate, Democratic or a Republican candidate, who dies shortly before the election, would be replaced, wouldn't he? Or she?
Well, the candidate could be replaced, but the difficulty is that when you cast an early vote, nobody knows who you cast it for. So it's very difficult to say, well, I want to go back and change my vote when nobody can prove how you voted in the first place.
Okay, let's listen to some of these conversations that I've been having over the last few days with these candidates. We want to reach out to you, our listeners, as well, to join us this hour. Do you support a non-major party candidate in this election? Tell us why you're voting outside the mainstream of the two dominant parties. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. We'll get your reaction to this after Dave Anderson. Let's listen to the short conversation I had with Bob Quast a few days ago, independent candidate for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat. He calls his party Bob Quast for Term Limits. Hello, Bob.
Hi there, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I understand you call your party the Bob Quast for Term Limits party.
Yes.
So I guess that tells us what your issue is. Tell us, why are you concerned about term limits, and what would you want to do about them?
Sure. It's my first platform issue. I'd love to make it the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The problem is everybody always thinks that you can just run for office and get on the ballot. I actually registered Democrat and tried to get into the primary against Bruce Braley, and the party refused to talk to me, to respond to any type of question I had about getting in and getting a debate with Bruce Braley in the Democratic primary. So there was no chance that they were going to let an outsider come in to be their chosen person. So it's kind of a misnomer to say that you can just run for office and take on the incumbent or whoever they choose.
And you think term limits would be a way to get at that, the power of the incumbency?
Right, because Iowa is the perfect example where if your name is not Chuck Grassley or Tom Harkin, you have not had any chance to get on to actually win an election in the past 30 years. We were, you know, successfully excluded from all three of the U.S. Senate debates that were, you know, really nothing more than a paid infomercial by the two parties that orchestrated the entire event and purposefully would not let us into the debate. There are four of us independent candidates that all tried to get into those debates.
Mm-hmm. Bob Quast, so what sets you apart from, in terms of issues and positions, from the two major party candidates for the open U.S. Senate seat, Congressman Bruce Braley and Joni Ernst?
Energy expertise. So I'm the only person running who has any expertise in energy. It's what I did for over two decades. I was the person at MidAmerican Energy who bought all of the low-cost energy, coal and natural gas, that we turned into electricity that keeps. We had a, when I was there buying the coal, it was low sulfur, clean coal, Powder River Basin coal from Wyoming, domestic energy that gives us high-paying careers here in the United States and would thwart this recession we're in if we would just embrace an all of the above American energy strategy, and that's not happening.
So explain a little bit more what you mean by all of the above approach to American production.
Sure, we should never demonize coal that's burned inexpensively and environmentally safe with very few emissions. CO2, you could ask any real scientist, is not a pollutant. It's what human beings breathe out. It's what plants breathe in and eat for their food. And by adopting this, by letting them tell us that we should all be ashamed of CO2 emissions, that we're killing the planet, is crazy, because all we're doing is we're shipping all of those jobs to China, where those same widgets are made for Walmart with no emissions controls, far worse emissions, including CO2, and we will never have a recovery that we are trying to get back of jobs made in the United States if we don't, you know, put a stop to the extreme environmentalists like Tom Steyer, which is Bruce Braley's biggest money donor, a billionaire who made his money from fossil fuels.
You are also a backer. We don't have much time, but you are a backer of something called Lynette's Law. Please tell us about that. I know it's a personal mission.
Yeah. Thank you. That's what got me into this fight with Mr. Braley. He said on Saturday evening that any good idea he would talk to somebody about. Well, that's not true. That's a false. It's a lie, because Lynette's Law would bring domestic violence awareness, prevention, and funding, and get tough on violent crime. My sister Lynette was murdered. She was dismembered, and her body was disposed of across state lines. That should have been a federal crime. It's not. I went to Mr. Braley to try to stop his early prison release and transfer across state lines into the federal system. Mr. Braley, to this day, has never talked to me and refuses to talk to me. And I would very much like to have a Lynette's Law that Domestic Violence Awareness Month that would actually address one of our biggest epidemics in the United States, domestic violence. Nobody talks about it. Nobody has any money for it. And I would like to make that a key issue that people once again do address.
How big is your campaign organization?
My campaign organization are supporters throughout all 99 counties. I am my own full staff. I mean, I have a social media team. I hired Manual Design that does a great job for my social media and website and such, but it's all volunteer-driven. I have no employees. Mr. Braley has over $1 million payroll. I'm certainly at the extreme opposite end of that.
Mm-hmm. I watched a primary commercial that you had during the primary that was a lot of it, as this conversation was directed against Mr. Braley. In fact, in that ad, you were wielding a Glock pistol and a knife when you were speaking about challenging Mr. Braley to a debate.
Yes, and that was that's called tongue-in-cheek humor, where I had a big smile on my face and said, hey, we're friendly folks here, and I don't think people should be afraid of the Second Amendment. I don't think they should be afraid of self-defense. The knife was the reference to Joni Ernst with her squeal video. My whole ad called Got Balls, Vote for Bob Quast, was a spoof days after the squeal video became infamous with Joni on The Tonight Show, as well as Mr. Braley's gaffe, where he was caught on tape bad-mouthing Chuck Grassley and Iowa farmers. So that's why I made those innuendos, because that had just happened days before, and that was my spoof ad.
Mm-hmm. Bob Quast, independent candidate for the open U.S. Senate seat here in Iowa. Bob Quast, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the time.
Conversation I had a few days ago with Bob Quast. Dave Anderson, live in our Ames studio. Your reaction to Bob Quast's candidacy, what is you hear that tells you he's not a major party candidate?
Well, I think Bob Quast is about the perfect example of what a third-party candidate is. He is somebody who has a key couple of issues that he cares about that he does not believe the two major parties are addressing. So he tries to influence the parties. He talked about how we tried to debate Braley and get onto the Democratic ballot, and he was unsuccessful. So the only recourse then is to become a third-party candidate to try to get your issues a little publicity and some action on them.
Mm. Christian joins us from Iowa City. Christian, you're calling in, and you support a non-major party candidate?
Actually, I support all non-major party candidates. I believe, of course, that our country was, you know, based on the idea of choice, democracy, et cetera. And, of course, President Washington implored us not to go to the two-party system, which we did. But we've ended up with a system very close to what they're actually seeing in Hong Kong right now, where small picked committees give us our candidates, and then we have a limited selection of who they tell us to vote for. Mm-hmm. And it's the illusion of choice. And so by supporting any non-major party candidate you can, you widen the field of choice. Of course, then the media, no offense, does have a tendency to paint them as outliers, crazy people, wackos, etc. And, you end up feeling like you're throwing your vote away if you vote for a third-party candidate, but it's not true. Until we do shake off those shackles and start voting for people and not parties, we're going to keep having the same problems we do.
Christian,
that's all I have to say.
Christian in Iowa City, thank you very much for your view. Tell us, perhaps a good chance for you, Dave Anderson, to tell us why we have this two-party system. How did it, two parties dominating, have for a long time? Was this something that the founding fathers envisioned?
Well, it was not something that they envisioned. In fact, they really opposed it, as Christian mentioned. Unfortunately, they kind of set the seeds for it. And by giving us the electoral system we have, they've guaranteed we'll not only would we have two parties, but that we would only have two major parties. Mm. By the way we structure our elections, with having a pluralist vote where whoever gets the most amount of votes wins, you really create a disincentive to have a third-party system. Generally, if a third party shows up and starts being competitive, one of the two major parties will tend to steal their issues and steal their voters. And we kind of have structured a system that will prevent a major third party from arising.
Okay, let's listen to another conversation I had with a third-party candidate, Rick Stewart, independent candidate for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat, a conversation I had with him a couple days ago. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you today, Ben?
I am doing fine. Tell us about the issues you're most concerned with and why voters should choose you.
Well, there's really only one issue that every American voter should be concerned with above all others, and that would be the $211 trillion in unfunded liabilities that the federal government has run up while we've had our backs turned, not paying attention. That is huge. Just to put it into perspective, it would be about $1.5 million per working American. And I don't know about you and your friends, but I haven't met too many people who have that kind of money. And the worst part about it is that it goes up by about $6 trillion every year. So we're not catching up. We're falling further behind.
Mm-hmm. What would you propose doing about that?
Well, the first thing is we should simply put it on our books. A lot of people are confused. They think the national debt is $17 or maybe $18 trillion. And, of course, that sounds like a really big number, and they worry about it. But because the federal government doesn't have to actually write down their liabilities, they don't realize that it's actually $211 trillion. So the first thing, and I think any senator that goes to Washington should be able to get this done, simply by making a lot of fuss about it, is the first thing is just simply write it down and put it down on the books so that the government has to be honest in their accounting methods.
Mm-hmm.
After that, of course, there's only two paths. I'd be certainly open to a third, but basically you either have to break the promises, that's the liability, okay, or you have to raise your taxes, or some combination of the two. That's what's going to have to happen. What some people don't realize, however, is that there's no way you're going to raise taxes that much, at least not that I can imagine, if you just grabbed all of the money from every single one of America's billionaires. That would only add up to $2.5 trillion, roughly 1% of what we need. So you're obviously not going to tax the rich to get it. I don't think you're going to tax the poor. And actually, the middle class don't have it either, because our economy simply isn't big enough to support an extra $6 trillion in taxation every year just to stay even. So it seems clear that you're going to break some promises, but I'm certainly willing to listen to other alternatives if somebody has those kinds of proposals.
So what specifically in terms of broken promises are you suggesting?
Well, most of our unfunded liabilities are in three categories. The big one is Medicare and Medicaid together, roughly $130 trillion. Basically, you know, Medicare is a promise that once you're 65, everyone else will pay your medical bills for you. And Medicaid is a promise that as long as you don't earn enough money, everyone else will pay your medical bills for you. and they add up to about $130 trillion in the total of unfunded liabilities. Mm-hmm. And roughly speaking, Social Security would be another $60. There's a lot of stuff after that. Any time that the government promises people something in the future, but they don't put it on their books, then that can turn into an unfunded liability.
Well, but Rick, haven't we paid for Social Security? It certainly comes out of my check, and everyone I knows know, and also Medicare.
Well, you didn't pay for yours. You paid for the people that got the money right after you wrote the check.
Right. It's a generational contract, right?
Yeah, it's intergenerational. The promise is that your grandchildren will pay for you, which is, in my way of thinking, a very strange promise. I don't know how I can promise that my grandchildren will pay me money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so those services just stop?
I didn't say that. I said you had to think about it. Okay, mm-hmm. We need to have a national discussion. Mm-hmm. What we're having now is basically a national non-argument. People throw out sound bites. For instance, I was listening to the debate last Sunday night between a couple of my opponents, and one of them suggested that we could solve the Social Security problem by raising the minimum wage, but, you know, a small amount of time with a piece of paper and a pencil, and you'll figure out that, I think if I did it correctly, it would be about 1/6,000th of the problem would be solved by raising the minimum wage. We need real solutions that are going to solve the whole thing, not just 1/6,000th of it.
Yep. We have just a few seconds left. Any other issues that you'd like to get out there that you're concerned with?
Well, the things that really amaze me are where we have issues that are slam dunk simple, and the politicians in Washington choose not to solve them because apparently they'd like getting reelected, and they can't get reelected if they don't have problems. But the three that I always talk about are like the drug war. Obviously, just end it. Okay, there's nothing beneficial about it. There's not even an honest intellectual defense of it. Number two would be immigration. A very simple solution to the world's worst immigration policy would be to simply charge people $50,000 for a permanent green card. That's pretty simple to do. And then the last here in Iowa, just get rid of all the ag subsidies, period, stop them. That's like third world politics. It really is undeserving of a nation like the United States to give millionaire farmers a $12,000 welfare check every year and somehow or another say that contributes to food security. I think the farmers themselves are actually embarrassed. There are only 70,000 of them in Iowa that get that check. Certainly the other 3 million of us don't need to write it to them anymore.
Okay. Rick Stewart, independent candidate for U.S. Senate, thank you for the conversation.
Well, thank you, Ben. Nice to be on public radio.
Dave Anderson, assistant professor of political science at Iowa State University. Your reaction to Rick Stewart's comments in his candidacy?
Well, again, Rick Stewart is a really good example of somebody who has kind of an axe to grind. He has some clear issues that he believes and I think is correctly pointing to that the two parties just don't deal with. We do have lots and lots of unfunded liabilities. The question is, what do we do about them? And I think he explained very well why the two parties don't touch it, because they like to win elections. Mm-hmm. As soon as you start talking about things like cutting Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and ag subsidies, right now I would bet that most of the listeners are shaking their heads saying on one of those, no, you don't. I wouldn't vote for you. Mm-hmm. And the two parties know this. They are what we call third rail issues that you just can't talk about them during elections because people won't vote for you.
We invite our listeners to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. A lot of Facebook comments, tweets to IPR Talk as well, emails to rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Certainly not time to comment about all of them. This one from Sasha, an email. I used to be a Democrat, but after the last 5 years, I've become frustrated with partisan politics and gridlock in Washington. I get the sense politicians like to keep the drama going so that they can position themselves as a hero in a crisis. Funny, the crisis never actually gets solved. Another tweet, thank you for covering third-party candidates. All too often, the mainstream media focus exclusively on main parties. So like the people running for office, the voters, their backers are feeling disenfranchised as well, Dave.
Yes, they are. I think constantly throughout the country, I'm going to guess somewhere between 1/3 and 1/2 of voters are saying they would really like to have a viable third party option because the two parties don't talk about a lot of the issues that we care about. They clearly don't work together to solve the issues when they get to Congress. And people recognize this. They're frustrated. They want some solutions and they want another alternative. unfortunately, because of our electoral system, it's probably just never going to happen.
We have a couple instances in this midterm election where independents are making their presence felt. In Kansas, our neighbor to the southwest, can you tell us what's happening there?
Well, Kansas is a very, very interesting state right now. And Kansas is a really good example of sometimes where a third-party candidacy can succeed. And largely it's because it's dominated by one party. It's been very Republican for a very long time. And when this happens, sometimes the ruling party kind of splits in two. And a few years ago, within the past decade, really, the Republican Party in Kansas kind of split between the moderate wing and the very conservative wing, though some people would argue it split between very conservative and just conservative. And in the last 5 years, they put in place some very conservative policies that have not proven to be very successful yet. And there's a backlash among voters. However, those voters are very unlikely to vote for a Democrat. But when there's an independent candidate, that suddenly can look very appealing.
And that independent candidate in this case is a man named Greg Orman running as an independent. Recently, I saw an interview where he said, you know, asked about who he'll caucus with once, if and when he becomes elected. He said, you know, I'll make that decision and I can change.
Yes, which is a very astute declaration. He's basically said that he will caucus, I believe, with whichever party is in the majority, which means that he would be in the party that is making policy, puts him in a powerful position. And it also allows him to avoid saying that he would ever caucus with the Democrats. He's not saying it's the Democratic Party that he would caucus with. It's just the majority party.
That puts him in a position of kingmaker. He's in a lot of power there if he would get elected.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is interesting because Republicans have held on to Kansas's Senate seats for the past 80 years, according to my research. So this is something unexpected. And when we look at the control of the overall Senate, really is something that turned up that the people who gamed this out didn't figure on.
No, they certainly did not. And I think there are a few races this year where stable party control is being questioned now. South Dakota is another example where you have several viable candidates now.
We'll talk about that later in the hour. Interesting four-way race in South Dakota, including, I think, two independents. Dave Anderson with us, assistant professor of political science at Iowa State University, talking about and with non-major party candidates running for the midterms. When we come back, we'll hear conversations with several in Iowa. Yet still to come, Ruth Smith, independent candidate for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat. Also, two candidates for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District seat, Ed Wright and Brian Jack Holder. Do you support a non-major party candidate in this election? Tell us why on social media. We're on Facebook, Iowa Public Radio is, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with Dave Anderson and more of Politics Day on River to River after a short break. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. Dave Anderson with us in our Ames studio, assistant professor of political science at Iowa State University. We're talking about, though the main parties, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, dominate politics in our state, in our country. We're hearing from five non-major party candidates and talking about the role that independents and third-party candidates play in our politics. We've been listening to a few of those in the first half hour. We want to listen to another one. Dave, let's listen to this conversation I had with Ruth Smith recently, independent candidate for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat. Ruth Smith, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Why should Iowans vote for you, Ruth?
Well, I think Iowans are ready for something different in Washington. I think from the ads that you see on TV and the bombardment of different kinds of political advertisements, that it's just the party system is no longer working for Iowans. And I think as an independent candidate, I can offer something different. And really, my main theme for running is trying to get big money campaign donors out of politics. So I think both of those concerns really ring true with most Iowans.
I think the polls back you up about the unpopularity of Congress in Washington, that people want something different in Washington. Campaign finance, it seems to be the heart of what you're doing, as you mentioned there. You call it the penny platform. How would you proceed if elected?
Well, I need to be in a position, I know, to really know the ins and outs of how legislation might interact with getting some changes, because I know that the Supreme Court will play a part in this, and so I'm kind of wondering if maybe if simple legislation doesn't work, it might have to be a constitutional amendment.
Mm, okay. What prompted you to run, Ruth?
I have been involved in kind of an interest in politics for several years. I received my master's degree in public policy a few years ago, and since then just been looking for opportunities. This particular race, we know, is one of the hottest, most important races across the country, and I'm really thought that this was an opportunity that, you know, if we want some change to be made, that this is the race to get into.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about your background. Any experience in politics?
Yeah, I serve as a city council member here in my town, Lamoni, and been involved in lots of community efforts and leadership positions. I work as a physical therapist in a county hospital nearby, and I've been a business owner and a teacher and a coach, so feel pretty well-rounded to have good perspective on policy making.
Mm-hmm. And I think that ties in, your work seems to tie in with another one of the issues that you're concerned about, equal opportunity for certain groups.
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that.
I think one of the major roles of government, really at all levels, is making sure that our value of equal opportunity is upheld. And so whether we're talking about regulation or even funding, I think the idea of making sure government is the equalizer in opportunity is very important.
Mm-hmm. That can be interpreted in different ways. Specifically, what groups are you talking about that you feel may not be getting equal opportunity today?
I think low-income groups. I think when you think about education, you know, how inner-city schools are funded versus suburban schools. So I'm thinking across the board. Mm-hmm. I think equal opportunity in pay for sure is an obvious one for women. Equal opportunity for marriage. I mean, that's obviously still a hot issue. Equal opportunity just across the board when we talk about America valuing equal opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We need to give it more than just lip service.
Ruth, have you been out canvassing, talking to people, convincing people of your candidacy?
My campaign is limited really to social media because this is a statewide campaign. It's just impossible to think of, you know, hitting the streets and hitting every kind of community for the door knocking effort. And of course, I don't have the resources in staff, you know, to help me with that. So really, I'm depending upon social media and opportunities like this, to be honest with you.
Okay. Ruth Smith, independent candidate for U.S. Senate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Conversation I had with Ruth a day or so ago. Dave Anderson, her last point, we really see a difference here in the resources available to candidates who are not backed by a major party. That makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a phenomenal difference. And really, until we came to this age of social media, it kind of made third-party candidacies totally impossible. Mm-hmm. At least now there are a few alternatives where you can get on you can start a web page, you can have a Facebook profile, you can tweet, and at least get your message out. But before this technological revolution, that was impossible.
But now we have it ramping up in terms of money that is needed to be elected to the Senate or Congress. So that's also another deficit that the independents have.
Oh, it absolutely is.
Okay. Let's listen to another independent candidate. Actually, we're going to listen to the Libertarian candidate. We're going to switch from the Senate race in Iowa to the race for Iowa's 3rd congressional district. And Ed Wright is the Libertarian candidate for that. Let's listen to my conversation with him recently. Ed Wright, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with the River to River audience.
Why are you running?
Well, Ben, my children and grandchildren have had increasingly fewer choices in their everyday lives due to relentless infringement of government on their freedoms. decades of Republican and Democratic Congresses and swarms of bureaucrats have persistently fear-mongered and tricked Americans into sacrificing their freedom and property for temporary tidbits or feelings of safety or comfort, freedoms that are never restored, as further fear-mongering just carries from one crisis to the next.
Mm-hmm. So specifically, what would you change in office? What would you try to change?
Oh, a number of factors, of course. My paramount theme is to choose freedom. And so my principal governing guidelines would be to be ever alert for any effort to further erode the freedoms of Americans, and to, as best I could, propose and support laws that would restore freedoms already lost.
Mm-hmm.
And from time to time, we see our Congress and bureaucracies propose infringements on freedom of speech through impingement or censorship of some kind in the press and in the Internet. And I think if freedom is ever once again to reign in these United States, we must keep the Internet free.
Tell us a little bit about the political experience you have, what you bring to the table to represent Iowa in Washington.
Well, as you might have discerned, Ben, I'm not a professional politician. In fact, I've never run for elected office before, unless you count my 6 years as chair of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. And I've had several other years in other executive committee roles with the Libertarian Party. I've not had a government job in my life, unless you count, of course, my 9 years of active duty in the U.S. Navy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you were in the Navy. Let's talk about foreign policy. What would be your difference with the major party candidates on present foreign policy or interventions overseas?
Well, I think our country's founders had it nailed. They may not have understood things like modern technologies, but they had the nature of government and power nailed precisely. And a policy of non-intervention articulated by most of our founders along the lines of free trade with all nations and entangling alliances with none. We have so many complex and interwoven entanglements. It would be impossible to just wave a magic wand and dissipate them all. But shame on us if we don't start the process of disentanglement.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about interventions when we perceive that our national security is threatened?
Well, we've got to be realistic about that perception. Number one, we've got to have intelligence that's reliable. And number two, we have to understand that we undoubtedly have the right to defend ourselves. And a vigorous defense is encouraged. We do not, however, have any rights whatsoever to blast somebody off the face of the earth simply because we think they might be thinking about doing something dastardly to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, are they swearing to bring down the United States or do whatever they can to harm the United States, which ISIS has done, right?
Well, we have to temper that with an awareness of, do they have the capability of doing what they're threatening to do? You know, a little mouse that threatens to take on an elephant herd is not much of a realistic threat. And I don't purport to have any special inside intelligence on that matter, only that we should make these decisions in full awareness of this. And if we're about to commit our young people in harm's way, as my military experience taught me, we can't do that capriciously. There's a reason why our founders, our framers of our Constitution, insisted that a state of war be conducted only under a congressional declaration. These are serious matters.
Ed Wright, thank you very much. Libertarian candidate for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Thank you for the conversation, Ed.
Thanks again, Ben. I appreciate it.
Conversation I had with Ed Wright a few days ago. Dave Anderson live in our Ames studio. So we often hear about the libertarian wing of the Republican Party. How do we understand Ed Wright's candidacy in relation to that wing of the Republican Party?
Well, I think the libertarian party in general has kind of had some movement in the last decade where it used to be associated kind of with a very right-wing thing because a lot of libertarian – or I'm sorry, a very left-wing thing because libertarians were opposed to a lot of government monitoring, a lot of government tampering with freedom of expression, freedom of speech. And now it's kind of shifting the other way that with the Obama administration, people are saying, well, you know, we have a Democratic president, so he's not changing things. So maybe it's we need a strict conservative approach to government. Let's just get rid of most things that government does.
Mm-hmm. We have a number of reactions to from our listeners going on here. Hypothetical question. Interesting from Jordan tweeting the hypothetical question. What would the U.S. look like with a parliament government, more than two parties? That gets us into comparing ourselves to other countries, specifically European countries having parliaments. They don't have two-party systems. Why?
Largely because two-party systems are a rarity. Most places say that, well, we should have representative government that represents what the people want, and people should have lots of choices. And to do that, you have to have an election where people can cast votes for whatever party they want, and you have some kind of proportional system where if your party gets 30% of the votes, you get 30% of the seats in Congress. Now, our system prevents that because we don't look at proportional representation. We do district representation where you have to win in a district. If we shifted our model of Congress, if we decided that for this election we're just going to have a national popular vote and you can vote for any party you want, and then the parties will choose whoever they want to go to Congress, probably in the House of Representatives, we would have a very different system. You would suddenly see not only a third party, but you would probably see a fourth and fifth, and other countries have as many as 11 or 13 parties.
Mm-hmm. With people currently in office with their hands on the levers of power. Not likely that's going to happen in the near future, though, is it, Dave Anderson?
I would say exceedingly impossible. And that's a big problem with a lot of the issues that third-party candidates raise, is that given who is currently in Congress and in power, they don't want to touch these issues.
Right. In nearly all these conversations we're hearing this week, we were limiting them to around 5 minutes, to be fair to all of them. But in a number of issues, I could have followed up with, well, how would you do that? How is that politically feasible in this atmosphere? And a lot of that gets stopped right in its tracks with that question, right?
Absolutely. I think Ruth Smith's point of tackling campaign finance reform is the best example. You could probably find 90% support across America for tackling campaign finance reform because everybody knows it's broken. However, the 435 people who were elected into the House and the 100 senators elected into the Senate won their seat in the current system. They have no incentive to change it other than the fact that most of them say they recognize it's broken and they know that they have to spend more than half of their time fundraising. And I think they're sick of it, too.
Okay. Dave Anderson, we are running out of time. Let's listen to our last independent candidate, Brian Jack Holder. A conversation I had with him. He's the independent Liberty candidate for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Brian Jack Holder, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for letting me be part of this.
Brian, why are you running? Tell us about the few of the issues that you're most concerned with.
Yeah, I'm doing this just to be another viewpoint that people can hear from. The two major political parties don't represent all Iowans on all issues, and from the two debates that I was not allowed to participate in, both the candidates agree on raising the minimum wage, and both of them sort of agree on a pathway to citizenship for the illegal aliens. So there's not much of a difference there between them on those two issues. And there may be other issues that they may be in agreement with that ITEP don't disagree or don't necessarily agree with.
Well, let's take those two issues. What are your positions on those two, minimum wage and immigration reform?
Yeah, the minimum wage thing is all tied into our currency system. We have a system that our currency isn't backed by anything but empty promises and threats of violence. So if we do raise the minimum wage, the corporations will raise their prices accordingly to compensate because they still have to make whatever profit margin that they want for their business to run properly. So I think all of us need to have a seat at the table in this conversation when it regards these major issues that affect everyone's life.
Yeah, on immigration then.
Yeah, on immigration. Right there, the both parties have worked together over the last 30, 40 years to not address this issue, and this is a major problem. I think that the corporate interests that pay both of these parties and their campaigns, they make money off of this almost slave labor source that they bring in from the third world, and it's completely unfair and unconstitutional to the workers themselves and to us and our system.
What would you propose instead of that in terms of reforming immigration?
Yes, what I would do, is I would use this this NSA spy grid and this police state that they have set up in our country to find all the violent offenders that are illegal aliens and the domestic ones too. But we need to use all this surveillance police state to round up the bad people so we can separate them from the good people that came here and are willing to work and obey the law.
And you don't think that, I mean, to some degree, that the law enforcement is not trying to root out the criminals here who are not here legally already?
Oh, I don't feel that they're doing that at all. You look at our government has just recently let go 60,000 convicted felons, illegal aliens, back out on the streets of America. And we have enough people that are homegrown criminals that we have to worry about. We shouldn't have to worry about importing them from other countries.
Brian Jack Holder, are there other issues that concern you?
Well, yeah, there basically is. Before I started this this campaign, like anyone should do, before you apply for a job, you should learn about that job. And I ask you to ask the other congressional candidates why there's only 435 seats in Congress to represent a country of 310, 320 million people. I would ask you to ask them that. And the reason is the very first amendment to the Bill of Rights, called Article the First, was never ratified. And it would have limited a congressional district to 50,000 people. And what that means is there should be 15 people representing this district in Iowa, not one person. So there should be one person representing every 50,000. And if I was elected, I would bring David and Stacy and Ed Wright, the Libertarian candidate, and whoever else wants to come from this district to go to Washington with me. We would all work together, we would all be equal again, and we would have a town hall meeting every night. I call it the Third Iowa Volunteers.
Hmm. Mr. Holder, tell us a little bit about your background, for instance, what you do for a livelihood.
Yes, my father and I have a photography and video business, but the economy is so bad that when you're an artist, you're on the tip of the spear in terms of the bad economy, and this recession has never ended. The two parties will tell you that it has, but it has not. Our currency is so hyperinflated that it doesn't buy anything anymore when you go to the grocery store. So I'm running this campaign, and I'm going to be writing a book about my experience when it's over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brian Jack Holder, independent Liberty candidate for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Thank you for this conversation.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and for the platform.
Conversation I had a few days ago with Brian Jack Holder. Dave Anderson, we really have just about 2 minutes left. I wanted to get to your reaction to the latest poll in the major party candidate U.S. Senate race. The latest Quinnipiac University poll released this morning finds the U.S. Senate race still too close to call. 47% for Republican State Senator Joni Ernst, 45% for U.S. Representative Bruce Braley, the Democrat. So we're 3 weeks out from here. I think the poll revealing 10% say they might change their mind. What's your read on this latest poll?
I think it's continuing to say that we don't know how this election is going to go. I don't think yet the poll has ever been outside the margin of error. So these candidates remain tied. And I think a lot of Iowans just aren't sure what they're going to do at this point.
Mm-hmm. But we're hearing about the ground game increasingly. The advantage, the Republicans or the Democrats in knocking on doors, getting people to vote who might not otherwise?
You know, I'm really not sure at this point. I think my personal story of this campaign is the level of outside spending and the decrease in the amount of voice that the candidates themselves have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Dave Anderson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. This hour, looking at non-major party candidates, hearing from several of them here in Iowa. Thank you for your reactions during the show from our listeners. We didn't get to nearly all of them, but thank you. Our conversation continues on Facebook, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Tomorrow on this program, Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on this program, has the United States Supreme Court become just another partisan institution? Well, many Americans think so, according to polls. We'll talk about that tomorrow. along with some of the most significant cases currently before the U.S. Supreme Court as they begin their new session. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.